If you've followed us on social media and haven't been living under a rock, you'll know us pair are partial to a gin of an evening.
In fact, if you've listened to episode 1 and 2 of Chew the Fat, this salubrious spirit actually comes up in both without fail.
Now, some might say that here in Ireland, we've reached not only peak gin, but we're completely saturated in it. We're even pickled in it at this point. And some of you might agree, but we've always believed that however crowded the market might be, the cream will always rise to the top and shine above all others.
One of Ireland's most celebrated and sensational gins, as well as being amongst the most unique, is Bertha's Revenge, a small batch, whey-based gin distilled in Ballyvillan House in beautiful County Cork. From its name and branding to its flavour, all smooth, creamy mouthfeel and warmly spiced notes, this is a real special gin, and it happens to be our favourite of all time.
We drove a couple of hours down to Ballyvillan House and chatted with business partners Justin Green and Anthony Jackson, the pair of gin-loving geniuses behind Bertha's Revenge. Now, we met this pair many years ago, and we'll get to that story later on, but we actually weren't entirely sure of how this incredible gin actually came to life. So we begin by asking Justin about how it all started while standing in the middle of the distillery.
We formed the company in 2015. And we launched in November 2015, and we'd had the first 12 batches distilled by Peter Mulryan of Blackwater Distillery. And then when we had our own stills commissioned by our local revenue lady, then we were up and running ourselves in-house in 2016. So we've been on our own ever since. I've been watching the whole gin rise and rise of premium gin in the UK for the last 10 years. And we're always looking for ways to try and fend off starvation at Ballyvillan House, because our existing business is tourism and weddings and glamping and very much confined to the busy summer months. And winter, our cash flow is always disaster, you know, so we're always looking for ways to try and generate a bit of income in the off-season, and always have an eye for an opportunity, and was watching the whole thing in England and couldn't get over the rise and rise of premium gin, and rang Anthony and said, would you be interested in exploring the whole gin project? And we booked flights to London and visited a lot of really trendy cocktail bars and spoke to lots of sort of hairy hipsters with tattoos and drank quite a lot of martinis.
We tried all sorts of things. And I think the first experience on that London trip that really opened our eyes to the possibilities of gin was we went for to Duke's Hotel for that sort of the special martini experience that everybody should experience. And we got a little bit overexcited. We were with two friends, and the four sat down, and we had four martinis and eye-watering amount of money. But just, it was a very, very simple, classic Duke's dry martini, four different gins, and each one was completely different. And we thought, my goodness, isn't this wonderful? You've got this such a different experiences from the same recipe, essentially.
Visited a few distilleries as well, and we had a very interesting conversation with a chap called Charles Maxwell, who's the head distiller of Thames Distillery in London, and he does an awful lot of contract distilling for a lot of the trendy gins on the market, like Portobello gin and among others. And we one of our main philosophies was a sort of farm to fork ethos we wanted to employ in our gin. And to our dismay, we discovered that a lot of the neutral grain spirit used by gin makers in the UK and Ireland came from France, because it's just not available in Ireland, Irish neutral spirit, because it's all used in the whiskey industry. And Charles Maxwell said, check out the whey alcohol. It's produced very near here in Carberry, and it's super quality, and it's Irish, so it ticked all those boxes. So we skipped out of his office, very excited, thinking, right, I think we're really on something here. But we hadn't tried it at that stage, so we rang Carberry, and they very kindly gave us a little sample, and we did a test run in our little countertop stills, and absolutely blown away by the texture. Chemically, it has exactly the same property as a grain neutral spirit, but what it does bring to the party is its mouthfeel and texture. It's got a lovely, luscious, generous, round mouthfeel and coats the inside cheeks incredibly well. And we were absolutely chuffed to bits with it. And whey is derived from cow's milk, which is produced by dairy farmers in Cork. We're in Cork, so, it's ticked all those sort of farm to fork or grass to glass ethos we wanted to employ. And we also then were experimenting with different botanicals. And for gin to be defined as gin, there's got to be a predominance of juniper. So that's always a given. And the coriander is the second most important ingredient. And juniper gives gin that sort of piney resin flavour that everyone knows gin for. And then the coriander brings citrus notes and freshness to the gin. And then roots kind of tie the whole thing together. They work as a fixative and get all the other botanicals working together. And then after that, you can do whatever you want. And we initially had set out to make a floral style of gin because we tasted a lot of different gins and identified a style we quite like drinking ourselves. But then when we started experimenting with some, you know, fragrant, heady spices like cardamom and cumin, we realized very quickly that the richness of the whey carried those heady spices incredibly well. So we ended up making quite a fragrant, spicy gin. For us, it was always about the flavour, you know, and it took us 9 months to develop our recipe. And, you know, the most important thing is flavour. So, you know, we put a lot of time and energy and effort into developing a really tasty gin.
Are there any Irish herbs or any plants of the area in the gin?
Sure, no, we'd love to have, you know, all our botanicals grown, you know, from here, and you know, to go around with my little Hessian sack for foraging in the mornings, but it's just not possible. You know, juniper does grow a little bit on limestone soil, and it's not abundant in Ireland, although it is growing a little bit around Limerick and on the sort of around Askeaton and Foynes. There's some juniper there because of the limestone soil, and a little bit on the Burren, but it's not nearly enough to pick sufficient amounts. Yeah. We buy our juniper from a spice merchant in the UK, and he has a very long-standing relationship with pickers, and you know, he gives us quality because we want the best juniper you can get. But we do forage for Alexander seeds, which is a little peppery seed that forms in the late summer, and it grows around the coast of Great Britain and Ireland, but only on the south, on the east coast of Ireland. It doesn't grow on the west of Ireland, okay, for some reason. And it was introduced, and Armagh, very, very important, and it was introduced to Britain by the Romans, actually, and then it must have blown across the Irish Sea in a windy day, and then took root.
Alexander.
That's right. And they have a lovely sort of high pepper notes and give our gin a degree of complexity that we really enjoy. And we go out in the summer evenings and listen to podcasts, and you know, and it's very relaxing. Yeah. And I really enjoy that time, but me time, so this selfish indulgence. But it's, you know, you feel you're working at the same time. The citrus call comes from Spain and North Africa. You know, we have lemon, lime, grapefruit, and sweet and bitter orange as well. So that sort of comes through on the finish. And you know, there's not much citrus growing around County Cork, I'm afraid. we have to import that. So you know, it's a mix of, you know, the imported and locally foraged botanicals. You know? Mm-hmm. You know, when we started in Ireland, there were 5 craft gins, and now there's about 35, 40. You know, so it is a very, very competitive space. And one of the reasons we chose whey as well was to have a meaningful point of difference. You know, because all the other gin makers were using mainly grain, neutral spirit, or sometimes potato. And you know, so it's that just always gives us a little bit of a competitive edge. And we have a fantastic, you know, story as well. You know, it's named after Big Bertha, who's the world's oldest cow, and she lived in near Sneem in County Kerry and died in 1993, age 48, which is a remarkable age for a cow, and it's in the Guinness Book of World Records. And she also had an eye bulging 39 calves during her lifetime as well. So that's pretty unique, and anyone who reads that story, you know, just puts a smile on their face. And it's a very Irish story, and we have Irish milk gin on the label, and you know, sometimes people find that a little bit off-putting, but it does ask the question, you know, what's milk got to do with gin? And then they get into the whole story, and they kind of go, then they understand it, and then they try it, and feedback has been terrific. And as I said, you know, it was always about the flavour from the start. And I think if you create something nice and tasty, you know, they will come back for more, and not, you know, everyone's going to try it out of curiosity. And I think the fact that they're coming back for more and more is very satisfying, and business is growing.
When we met originally, which was now 2 years ago, was at the London Embassy. So Bord Bia have a event that's on regularly every year in the London Embassy, and it is a great opportunity for Irish producers, such as yourselves, of drinks in particular, to come along and showcase to people like us, trade and journalists. And I remember that night, it was your banner was right there that said Bertha's Revenge, milk. And we were like,
Not so sure about this.
We were like, we'll put it on a list, and we'll go through them. And as we go through it in the night, we will try it, but we'll just hang on just a few moments. And I think it was toward the very end of the night, we're like, we have to try this. It's special. And when we tasted it first, you know, Jefferson Airplane song? That was it. It was that feeling when we tried it for the very first time. It was mind-blowing for us.
And that is how we began our long-term loving relationship with Bertha. Not quite an acid trip, as the song might suggest, but it really opened us up to a new world of flavours. This was like no other gin we had ever tasted and stuck it in our palates ever since.
Now, we visited many, many, many gin distilleries over the past few years, so we like to think we understand the process very well. However, we ask Anthony to run through this particular process just for you.
Basically a three-day process. So the day before, we measure out 50 litres. So we're using a 125-litre small electric still from Belgium. We've got two of them, named after our mothers. That's Mary and that's Ellie. And so the working capacity is 100 litres. So we're mixing 50 litres of our whey ethanol, and then we cut that with 50 litres of our own spring water from here at Valley Blan, to bring it up to 100 litre capacity. And then we add our mix of botanicals to that. So they're all pretty robust botanicals. We don't have any baskets or anything to suspend botanicals over the liquid. It's all immersed in the liquid. So we put them together overnight, put them in, give them a good old stir, and put the top on and let them macerate gently overnight. Some of the spices we do sort of break up to give it a little bit more, release more of the fragrance, and hopefully that'll get into the gin. And again, that again depends on the state of the botanicals when they come in. Some are very, very ripe, some are going a little bit dry, so need a bit of help to get going. But overnight, it usually is sufficient sort of to work its magic. Then still on time is usually between 7 and 8 o'clock in the morning. And with these small stills, it goes very quickly. But we've gone for a sort of gentle distillation approach, which did take a little bit longer until about sort of 4 months ago. And then we decided we could actually turn the heat up a notch and push it on a little bit, but without damaging the spirit at all or affecting the spirit. The first thing that happens is we take off the heads, which is the first of the three parts that come off the gin. Liquid comes to about sort of 73, 74, 75 in our stills degrees. It boils, it collects some liquid vapor, and the vapor passes over the swan neck here into the condenser, which is cooled on a pipe of cold water going through all the time. So that cools the vapor and liquefies it again, and then we get the liquid coming out at the bottom, sort of beautifully clear and very, very exciting. But the first part of the process is the heads, you know, we can't use. They contain a lot of phenol oils, and also you can get an element of cloudiness, obviously, which will affect your finished product down the line. So in our case, after about sort of 8 or 9 litres, we're cutting and transferring over to hearts, which is really our main gin, which we take. And then that runs gently for another 3-4 hours. And we're taking maybe about 32 litres of hearts. And then towards the end, and we'll taste it today as we go along, it's funny, through the process, you're getting different tastes and sensations. You can almost pick up individual botanical characteristics from sweet citrus or the rooty elements or through some of the more sort of spicy curry herbs. But towards the end, it all gets a little bit thin and acrid, and it's just unpleasant, and you know you're into the roots and into sort of the bare bones. You're sucking the bones out of the thing, like sucking marrow bones. Oh, yeah. Not quite as enjoyable as that. But the third element, which is tails, that is kept to one side. Now, most distillers, especially whiskey distillers, can redistill both the heads and the tails back into their next batch without affecting quality or anything else. It's a really good way of using up product. We're not doing that. We're keeping them and stockpiling them there, actually, in large quantities. And we hope to be able to somehow recycle those in some shape or form, maybe. But then the hearts are taken off. So that's day two, end of day two. The hearts are taken off. And we do an initial cut the first day, and we bring it down to, it's coming off at about 80%, 79-80%. And we bring it down to 44%. Now, our declared ABV on our bottles is 42%, but you just want to be careful, err on the side of caution the first night. So we add, our own spring water again to cut it down to the required 44% and let it just sort of get to know each other and mingle up overnight. And the next morning, day three, we measure it again, and hopefully it's quite close to 44%, and then we do a final very exact cut to 42. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of 0.1 of a degree tolerance, but we, you know, try and get as close to 42 as possible. And then we roll up our, you know, sleeves and get bottling, because it's all manual here. It's all in-house. We bottle everything by hand in that little machine over there. It's got three nozzles for the big bottles and one little bottle nozzle on the left for our small miniatures. So it's all pretty time consuming. And then we label them after that and cap them. We rather overcomplicated the process in our bottle, because we've got seven processes on the bottle as opposed to one label. We've got lots of different labels, and we've got a cop and a cap and a wax seal, and it's all, and then we handwrite each batch number on it. So it's a bit of a labour of love, which we sometimes, towards the end of the day, regret, but...
but if you need any help at any time, we will be happy to jump in.
Famous last words. In the end, we did give a hand with the bottling process for that day's production. Those bottles you have at home, or hopefully running out to buy right now, might be the very ones we hand-bottled and labelled. Speaking of the label, adorned with a sketch of Big Bertha herself, it is also emblazoned with some of the awards this gin has received over the years. And Justin runs through them.
We're very proud of our awards, and it just gives us a little bit of confidence in what we're doing. And we won a gold medal at the San Francisco World Spirits Competition in 2017, and that's one of the biggest, best, most recognised spirit awards body in the world. And then more locally, we won a gold at the Blosna Heron Irish Food Awards down in Dingle last September for our slow gin, which is absolutely fantastic. And the slows, we steep the slow berries in our gin for around 6 months, and then we add sugar at the end, and it's absolutely delicious. And we won the Irish Fruit Writers Guild Drink of the Year Award in 2017, and that's really special as well, because they only give out one drink award every year, and it could be, it's across all sectors, cider, beer, wine, whiskey, gin, vodka, and they just love the fact where we are using whey, which was a sort of byproduct of the dairy industry, and they appreciated our ingenuity and innovation, I think. And then we won a star at the Great Taste Awards in the UK. We won the International Wine and Spirits Competition. We won a bronze medal in 2016. And then we also won Drink of the Year from John and Sally McKenna's Guides, which was fantastic to get that as well. And I really value their opinions. We hope to win a few more in the coming years ahead as well.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of Chew the Fat, the podcast by us two, better known as Gastrogaze. If you want to give us that extra bit of support, we'd love if you could rate and review the podcast over on iTunes to help us climb up the charts. Subscribe too, so you never miss an episode.
And if you'd like to support us even more, plus get your hands on the podcast a few days before everyone else, you can pledge your support for us over on our Patreon page at patreon.com/gastrogaze, where from as little as a little bit of small loose change, you can help sponsor the costs, which all add up whilst we record this podcast. Of course, the podcast will always be free to download and enjoy no matter what. Back to Ballyvolan now, though.
What we notice from the get-go is it says Irish small batch gin, at the end of the day. And we've been to many, many distilleries all around Britain and Ireland and elsewhere. And this is one of the smallest operations, but yet one of the most popular and most well-known gins. It's quite incredible. Have you ever thought of going that little bit bigger with things?
Very good question. From the start, I think, as Justin was mentioning earlier, the whole thing for us was trying to produce something that we could really stand over in terms of quality, that we could sort of sit very easy with, and hopefully other people would enjoy it, both here domestically and internationally. We are here to make money. It's got to be a business, and a successful business. We're both nudging 50. We don't get too many more shots of it, either Justin and I. And from the start, we've been very much sort of looking towards an export market as for our gin. But, we're in a very deep pockets, and we're really delighted the way that we've developed the business from the start with minimal borrowing. And we got up and going for less than €40,000, which is, okay, it's all money, but it's in the scheme of things, it's not a huge amount. I mean, these stills here, cost under 14 grand for the pair of them. You know, it's phenomenal. But you're right, we are very limited in capacity. We're producing and bottling and selling between 500 and 600 bottles a week at the moment, which again is a lot, but in the scheme of things, it's not. But we want to expand, and to that end, we looked at each other very firmly. It's right, are we serious about this last June? And we went to Germany on a still shopping trip. And wonderful, if you're into copper porn, it's the place to go, you know. And beautiful, beautiful, beautiful workshops, all all those curves, exactly, dimple copper, my goodness me. So we saw two that we liked, Holstein and Karl, and we plumbed for Karl in the end, but Holstein are fantastic. And we ordered a 550-litre bespoke still for ourselves, which will be hopefully arriving in the next sort of 6 weeks here. So going back to your question, that'll bring us, treble our capacity here. And it'll just really make our time management much better, because at the moment we're doing two runs a day on these small stills, and it's quite a lot of work just managing the stills and let alone bottling. So it means we can actually do two runs, or three runs a week, and create a huge amount of spirit which we can bottle when we need it and draw down that stock when we need it. Right from the start, we've been really conscious and very strict with ourselves about managing expectations and those of our clients. And we don't want to say, of course you can have 100 cases next week and isn't it wonderful to get the sale. We said, no, we can't offer you that. We can't do that. So either it's a longer lead time, or we can maybe offer you 20 cases and would you be? And we can understand the frustrations from our client's point of view and customer's point of view, and we're a little bit frustrated ourselves, but there's no point putting unnecessary strain or making promises you can't keep. But hopefully, when you come back and visit this time next year, we'll have a big shiny lady there and she'll be pumping it all out. For just tonight, it's really good fun. Again, it's got to be commercially successful, but it's really good fun, and we don't want to lose sight of that and want to keep as hands-on as possible. And the fact that we are making it on-site is really, really important element for us. And I think it's becoming a little bit more of a talking point in the industry, both in gin and whiskey, about how people say they're doing one thing and maybe not doing the other, and there's a little bit of a blurred line between are you really artisan, are you really small batch, are you really in it for the reasons you say you're in it for the label, and actually you're doing something else. But everybody's different, but this is what we're about, and we're enjoying it.
For you guys, gin is king, really, is it?
Absolutely. We didn't ever think of whiskey, honestly. I think it goes back to what we thought we were capable of. It's been a long time since either of us sat in a chemistry lab at school. So, our abilities were maybe limited from the get-go. But also, it requires investment from the start, and we weren't too sure of how to go about that and if we wanted it. But no, we were very adamant at the beginning to set out to make gin, as good a gin as we could, that something we liked, and really to build a brand around that would sit very comfortably along with the Ballyvallan House brand. We've toyed with vodka. We may or may not do a vodka. I think it probably could work very well with the way Black Cow and Dorset do it very, mm-hmm. very nicely, but it's something that might work on a small scale. And so we're just sticking to the gin base, but we're going to roll it out into maybe more infused gins, like we've launched our slow gin, mm-hmm. and so we hope to bring two more fruit infused gins on later in the year, and that would be nice. And we're launching a Navy Strength gin in next month, May. So, which again, be very, very niche, very much aimed at the on trade, but it's just another part of the portfolio. I think you've got to, and it's fun also to experiment, but you've got to build a bit of a portfolio of your brand.
Obvious questions out of the way first. Had either of you any experience ever in producing a gin? No.
Not legally, no. No, not at all. My background's in recent years is in the wine trade, so I know the drinks trade a little bit more, but I have to say it's very much wine focused. And Justin's, through his hotel background, obviously has come across beverages and wine, spirits, and beer through his career. But we'd never got involved in an apron before in a gin making capacity. But it's fun, and we got such good help from Peter Moran, who's a great friend and neighbour at the beginning. And again, it was, I think, good for him. He was starting off, he's about sort of 10 months ahead of us in the process. I mean, he's galloping on now, but and he was, we were able to go to him and pay him a fee for his time as he held our hand and got us more familiar with the whole process. And then we were able to come back here and develop the recipe. And then in the early days, we were use his premises to distill and bottle. But it's just fun. It's fun because it's very, very real. It's all pared back. It's if you take it slowly, it's a process that you've got to go through. Just when you think you've mastered it, something horrible happens, and you say, "Oh my God, how did that happen?" And you've got to watch every element of it. But that's the fun thing. Yeah, you're back being two boys in the chemistry lab again, and it's fun.
Your brand is only two, and ask anyone who enjoys gin, and they will probably answer that you have a slick brand and a great flavor. After 2 years, is there anything you wish you knew at the start now?
Crikey, O'Reilly. Gone for a bigger space initially because we're outgrowing this one. But we do take care each year and even twice a year. We're going through the process and saying what do we need and where do we think we'll be and what do we need to facilitate that. So we have planned it quite well, and I think. We are getting on in years, and one of the benefits of the only benefits of getting on is you have life experience in various work situations and careers, and you can sort of bring that to bear. No, I think we've gone pretty well. We didn't rush into this. We researched the market. We looked at what we had as an infrastructure here at Ballyvolan and what we needed to get it going. We were really, right from the start, we were very, very conscious of, okay, we know the spirit's good, we like it, but how do you convey that message to a consumer? Now, you convey it through the packaging and through your bottle and through, thank God for social media, Justin's superb at the social media. He's very, very good at getting a message out, and it's a great fun and cheap way of doing it. But we looked long and hard at a bottle design, and we were able to find initially a stock bottle that we were able to use, so that kept the cost down. And then we spent a lot of time with our label, and I wrote the copy for the label and our brochure and the website. And it's just you've got to set the right tone and get people interested. And right from the very basic thing of having Irish milk gin on your label, when we were brainstorming that amongst friends and family at the beginning, a lot of people liked it. Some people were saying, why the hell are you putting milk gin? That's going to turn people off or confuse people. You're sending out a mixed message. And thank goodness we stuck to our guns, because it's from whey. It's not directly from milk, but it is derived from milk. So we're being truthful to that. But also it's a hook. It gets people talking about it. And in this day and age where, we all seem to be talking about food and drink happily and the provenance of it and where it all comes from, looking for a point of difference, that conversation that starts in the bar or in the club or the hotel where the customer goes to the bar and says, "What have you got interesting? Oh, I've got this. What's the milk? Tell me about that." So there's a story starting even before the liquid hits the glass. And that's a really solid start to a relationship. And it's something we've really... We enjoy seeing, but also the feedback we hear from people at events or through online is exactly that. They're interested by it, and they taste it. It's something to hook them. And again, as you talked about early on with Justin, it's such a crowded market now, and there are a lot of really, really good gins out there. So how do you get your little head, especially as a small scale producer like us, above the parapet? And thank goodness for the a big, lovely cow in the front and the word milk.
It just works, yeah.
Is the cow stuffed, yes or no?
Bertha is stuffed. She died, as Justin said, in 1993, and she was stuffed, I gather, by an amateur, maybe the emphasis on the amateur, German taxidermist, and she's much smaller in stature than you'd think. And she sits on top of a bit of AstroTurf on four supermarket trolley wheels, and she lives very comfortably in a shed outside Clawglen. But she's very much stuffed, and she looks as if she's been ravaged by Macronaferba a little bit, but she's on an away day. But she is good, and you can get a great sense of the character that she was, sort of, I think. I mean, we have great ambitions. Justin and I will start buying stock of the Drummond herd, which is a very small national herd of Drummond, so it's an endangered species, or a rare breed rather. So we will get some livestock for people to look at, but we've been so grateful to George, who owns Bertha, and we've been allowed to use her for our launch in Dublin, you know, wheeling her up Georgia Street in the middle of the Christmas party season was extraordinary. But she is stuff, but she's in good nick. But she's very much still a feature and an important part of that local community there. And her memory is kept alive, but she's used on their summer festivals every year, or the community plays, you know, Bertha's Wheeled In. And so her memory is very much kept alive, and she's a very important part of that. You know, God, life is a serious thing, but let's not make it too serious. And so we right from the start, you know, I was very keen that we give our gin a personality. So by using Bertha's name and image and backstory, suddenly it wasn't an it, it wasn't a unit, it was a lady. It was very much a feminine characteristic, and she had a personality. And we, all the way through the timeline of our gin story, she's been referred to as she, and it's her, and it's you know what she can do for us and everybody else. It's a small part of what's happening, thank God, in the food business generally. I know it's a first world situation and conversation, I know, but it's really, really good and important that people do take a bit more care about what they're eating and what they're drinking and what they're spending their money on, and is it, you know, value for money. And the fact that we're a very, very small part of that is great, but I think it's sort of indicative of what's happening in the industry anyway, that people, small producers, no matter if they're producing cheese or bread or lovely charcuterie or fish products or drink or beer, you know, if it has got a bit of a story, if it has a bit more tangible as a product and not just a brand hiding behind multi-million dollar ad campaigns and Hello Money and all that sort of stuff, people really engage with that, thank goodness. But it's if people can sort of save up and use it as a treat, it's not it's not sort of a throwaway disposable item, it's something to be enjoyed and savored and shared with friends and talked about. I mean, you're not having a homogenous gin and tonic and a pretty crappy tonic in it, and you're just spending a lot of money on a nice gin, maybe sharing it with another different gin and having a conversation about it, and it's one gin against another gin, and we're all friends together, you know.
Do you remember when we used to have what was called Bertha's Day? We used to have
a very special day of every single week that we would allow us a ration of one gin and tonic every Saturday night using Bertha's Revenge, and no other gin had that structure or that presence on our shelf. If there was one place in Ireland for a proper gin, where would you suggest, as in like a hotel or a restaurant?
I'd like to say I've been to them all, but I haven't. I'd have to say, obviously, Ballyvlan House Hotel. You've got to pull up a stool there and get stuck in. And Justin's got a great range of gins there and serves them very, very well. A place that really left an impression on me that I enjoy the whole theatre and experience and knowledge of the gin was in the bar at Merchant Hotel in Belfast. Mm. And we went there quite a long time ago, and they were had obviously really trained their staff very well, and it was a great, you know, they had three different sorts of ice going on, and it was all very professionally done, really, really good extensive menu, and a great knowledge from the staff of what went into all sorts of cocktails, not just gin-based cocktails, all sorts of cocktails. And the Negroni we had there, which they kindly made with Bertha, they weren't stocking Bertha at the time, they are now, was just sublime, you know, delicate and very much aimed at sort of northern European palates, and it was really, really good. And the lovely thing is, guys, as you know, from starting this voyage, and it was the big urban hotels would have gins and quite an extensive gin bar, but there are little pubs all the way around the country in the back end of nowhere that suddenly have on the little sort of blackboard on the bar there are four or five gins that they've got and their serves, and that is just brilliant. And I think, again, on a slightly serious point, where rural Ireland is on its knees in terms of the pub culture, and not helped by Mr. Ross and his sort of zero drink driving policy, and with no help for communities in terms of community bus services. Getting young people into pubs again, not to drink stout and ale and lager out of a tap, but to drink craft beers and to drink craft gins, and to come in with the energy that young people bring, I think that's just superb, and it's just—I don't think it's shouted about enough. You know, we should be really encouraging that. So it's back to this, you know, come out and enjoy a drink and maybe some music and some food if you're lucky. But it's been a really good thing for the Irish pub, especially the Irish rural pub, I think.
Couldn't agree more with Anthony. In those quick few years since the first bottle of Bertha's was sold, the guys had always wanted to give something back in some way, and now they're delighted to be in a position to do so.
Right from the start, when we put together our little plan for this business, was, well, you know, life's been good to us, and hopefully we'll get a bit better for us. But we want to try and give some money to charity for when we started making a profit. Now that didn't happen for a couple of years, but thankfully in last year we're in a position we could give something back to charity. And so we said, what are we going to do? Is it going to be for, you know, local cancer charity? Sadly, Justin's mum passed away from cancer some years ago, and or animals, whatever. And we've got some great charities here in Ireland, and just having done some research, the obvious one for us was BOHA, based in Limerick. And they do really good direct aid to deserving communities, mainly in Africa, but also in Eastern Europe. So I contacted them and said, we'd be keen to talk to you, and how do we go about this, and what do we do, but we'd like to buy a cow, please. And they thankfully said they bit our hand off. I said, great. So we went through the process, and we had a great fund in February. In Roscrea Mart this year, we met Bertha, as she's now officially called. She's a Friesian cross dairy cow in calf, donated by an Irish farmer very generously. We pay for her and the transport and inoculation and feed. And she's gone out to Rwanda, to a little village just north east of Kigali, I think, to a community there where she will enrich their lives beyond all knowing, from a financial and practical point of view. It's fantastic. And she's sort of settling in now, and she'll hopefully bear many, many calves, probably not as many as Bertha herself, but a few. And that for us, I mean, God, the buzz Justin and I had of that, coming away from that meeting at Roscrea was extraordinary, because you're actually doing something really, really good. And the fact that making a bit of gin and selling it to people who are, you know, kind enough to buy it from us has facilitated that is just quite emotional.
You can't even imagine how delighted we were to make this personal pilgrimage to Bertha's Revenge's home at Ballyvallan House, run by Justin and his wife Jenny. If you'd like to see more and read more about the property, please go to gastrogaze.com, where we've written all about our time and our stay at this gorgeous country house. We actually visited just before Prince Charles and the Duchess of Cornwall stayed for the night. So technically speaking, they stayed in our royal room.
A huge thanks to Anthony and Justin and all the fantastic team at Ballyvallan House for helping us bring you this edition of Chew the Fat. Now, we couldn't come all the way to a gin distillery and give them all the attention now, could we? Ireland and the UK are both awash with plenty of fantastic gins. So, as a final question, we asked Justin and Anthony to tell us their favourites.
I like Shortcross from Northern Ireland. Yes. It's really, really tasty gin, and it's quite strong. It's 47% ABV, and you know, the higher the ABV, the more flavour it carries. I think they make a lovely gin. Blackwater is really good too. I really like Peter's work, and there's a new one called Beera from West Cork, and they have their sea salt in there, and yeah. I think that's really good as well, I like that, and there's so many. I like Sip Smith, which is a much more sort of juniper forward gin, London dry gin, and Hendrix as well, we have a lot to thank for, you know.
Yeah.
And they were only formed launched in 2000 in America, and then 2003 in the UK. It's, you know, people think Hendrix has been around since Victorian times. Yeah. They've been very clever with all their sort of illustrations on the label.
Mm.
And then Dingle really stole the march in Ireland. They were the first sort of craft gin to hit the Irish market, and it's very keenly priced as well and good quality. You know, there's a lot of good ones. Mm. And then this is Black Cow Vodka, which is also using whey from the UK.
We tried that ourselves a few times.
It has that lovely texture and coats the inside cheeks beautifully.
I mean, for me personally, I love the simplicity. I think I like Sip Smith's. I think it's a really good classic style. I'm a great fan of Heppel Gin. I really like Heppel Gin. Again, I like their story. I like the people behind it. But I just like their gin at a tasting. I love Warner Edwards. Their rhubarb one in particular. I'm a great fan of those guys. Mermaid Gin from the Isle of Wight. I like a lot. Yeah, it's a good gin. And then, oh God, I'm going to sound terrible. I mean, and then from an Irish point of view, you know, I like Shawcross, and Gunpowder is okay, and it's fine. I generally don't go back to a very classic dry style now, because I'm so, my taste buds obviously shot with curry spices. But I do, and it's very important to experiment and try other people, and it's lovely. But it, you know, those that I mentioned would be ones that I might sort of go to for a night out.